This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Calamity, written by Brandon Sanderson, narrated by McLeod Andrews. Prologue. I've witnessed the fearsome depths. I was in Babylar, Babylon restored, formerly New York City. I stared into the burning red star known as Calamity and knew, with no uncertainty, that something inside me had changed. The depths had claimed me as one of their own. And though I've pushed them back, I still bear their hidden scar. They insist that they will have me again. Part 1. 1. The sun peeked over the horizon like the head of a giant radioactive manatee. I crouched, hidden in a tree of all places. I'd forgotten how weird the things smell. "We good?" I whispered over the line. Instead of using mobiles, we were relying on old radios we'd rigged to work with headsets. The audio snapped and popped as I spoke. Primitive technology, but essential for this job. "Wait a sec," Megan said. "Cody, you in position?"
"Sure I am,"
crackled the reply, laced with a calm southern drawl.
"If anyone tries to sneak up on you, lass, I'll put a bullet up his nose."
"Ew," Mizzy said over the line. "We'll move in 5, I said from my perch. Cody had called the contraption I was using a tree stand, which was really a glorified camp chair strapped some 30 feet up the trunk of an elm. Hunters had used them back in the day for hiding from game. I put my Gottschalk, a sleek, military-style assault rifle, to my shoulder and sighted through the trees. Normally, in this sort of situation, I'd be sighting on an epic, one of the super-powered individuals who terrorized the world. I was a reckoner, same as my team, dedicated to bringing down dangerous epics. Unfortunately, life for the reckoners had stopped making sense about 2 months ago. Our leader, Prof, was an epic himself, and had been caught in a rival's intricate plot to find a successor. Consumed by his powers, he had left Regalia's empire in Babylar, but had taken with him her hard drives, complete with notes and secrets. We intended to stop him, and that led me here, to a large castle. Seriously, a castle. I'd figured those were just in old movies in foreign countries, yet here one was hidden in the woods of West Virginia, and despite the modern metal gates and high-tech security system, this place looked like it had been around since long before Calamity appeared in the sky. Lichen covered the stonework, and vines twisted up one of the weathered walls. Pre-Calamity, people had been weird. Awesome, too. Evidence? Castle. But still pretty weird. I looked away from my scope and glanced at Abraham, who was hiding in a nearby tree. I could pick him out only because I knew exactly what to look for. His dark outfit blended well into the dappled shades of morning, which was, our informant said, the best time to assault this particular location. Shubrent Castle, also known as the Nighthawk Foundry, the world's primary source of epic-derived technology. We'd used their weapons and tech to fight Steelheart, then Regalia. Now, we were going to rob them. "Everyone have their mobiles off?" I asked over the line. "Batteries out?" "You've asked that 3 times already, David," Megan replied. "Check anyway." They all gave the affirmative, and I took a deep breath. So far as we knew, we were the last cell of Reckoners. 2 months in, and we still had no sign of Tia, which meant she was probably dead. That left me in charge. Though I'd gotten the job by default, Abraham and Cody had laughed when I'd asked if they wanted it, while Mizzy had gone stiff as a board and almost started hyperventilating. Now we were putting my plan in motion. My crazy, foolhardy, incredible plan. Honestly, I was terrified. My watch buzzed. Go time. "Megan," I said into my radio. "You're up."
"On it."
I shouldered my rifle again, peering through the trees toward where Megan would launch her assault. I felt blind. With my mobile, I could have tapped into Megan's view to follow her attack. Or I could have at least brought up a local map and watched my team represented as blips. Our mobiles, however, had been built and distributed by Nighthawk, who also maintained the secure network they ran on. Using those to coordinate an attack on Nighthawk's own installation seemed about as smart as using toothpaste for salad dressing.
Engaging, Megan said.
And soon a pair of explosions shook the air. I scanned through my scope and picked out the smoke trails rising in the sky, but couldn't see Megan. She was on the other side of the castle. Her job was to make a frontal assault, and those blasts had been grenades she'd thrown at the front gate. Attacking the Nighthawk Foundry was, of course, absolutely suicidal. We all knew this, but we were also desperate, low on resources, and being hunted by Jonathan Phaedrus himself. Nighthawk refused to deal with us, and had gone completely silent to our requests. Our choices had been to try to take on Prof unequipped, or to come here and see what we could steal. This seemed the better of two bad options.
Cody?
I asked.
She's doing fine, lad, he said over the crackling radio line. It looks just like that video. The place released drones right after the explosions happened.
Pick off what you can, I said.
Roger.
Mizzy, I said, you're up.
Groovy,
I hesitated.
Groovy? Is that some kind of code word?
You don't know? Sparks, David. You can be a real square sometimes.
Her words were punctuated by another series of explosions, larger this time. My tree shook from the shockwaves. I didn't need my scope to see the smoke rising from my right, along the castle's flank. Soon after the blast, a group of basketball-sized drones, sleek and metallic, with propellers on top, popped from windows and flew toward the smoke. Larger machines rolled out of the shadowed alcoves, spindly and about as tall as a person. Each had a gun arm on the top and moved on tracks instead of wheels. I followed these with my scope as they started firing into the woods where Mizzy had planted flares and buckets to give off heat signatures. Remotely firing machine guns enhanced the illusion that a large squad of soldiers was out there hiding. We kept all the shots aimed high. We didn't want Abraham in the crossfire when it was his turn to move. The Nighthawk defense played out exactly as we'd been shown on the video from our informant. Nobody had ever successfully breached the place, but many had tried. One group, a reckless paramilitary force out of Nashville, had taken videos, and we'd managed to get copies. Best we could guess, most of the time all of those drones were inside patrolling the hallways. Now, however, they were out fighting. Hopefully that would give us an opening.
All right, Abraham, I said into the line. Your turn. I'll cover.
And off I go, Abraham said softly.
The careful, dark-skinned man rode a thin cable down from his tree, then slipped silently across the forest floor. Though he was thick of arm and neck, Abraham moved with surprising nimbleness as he reached the wall, which was still shadowed in the early morning light. His tight infiltration outfit would mask his heat signature, at least as long as the heat sinks on his belt were functional. His job was to sneak into the foundry, steal whatever weapons or technology he could find, and get out in under 15 minutes. We had basic maps from our informant, claiming that the labs and factories on the bottom floor of the castle were stuffed with goodies ripe for the plucking. I watched Abraham nervously through my scope, pulling the aim point to the right so an accidental discharge wouldn't hit him, to make sure no drones spotted him. They didn't. He used a retractable line to get to the top of the short wall, then another to reach the castle's roof. He hid beside one of the crenellations while he prepared his next step.
There's an opening to your right, Abraham, I said into the line. One of the drones popped out of a hole beneath the window on that tower.
Groovy,
Abraham said, though the words sounded particularly odd coming from him, with his smooth French accent.
Please tell me that's not a real word,
I said, then raised my gun to follow him along as he made for the opening.
Why wouldn't it be? Mizzy asked. It just sounds weird. And things we say today don't? Sparks? Slants? Those are normal, I said. Not weird at all.
A flying drone passed by,
but fortunately my suit was masking my heat signature. That was good, since the wetsuit-like clothing was pretty darn uncomfortable, though mine wasn't as bad as Abraham's. His had a face mask and everything. To a drone, I'd have a tiny heat signature, like a squirrel or something. A secretly very, very deadly squirrel. Abraham reached the alcove I pointed out. Sparks, that man was good at sneaking. In the moment since I'd looked away, I'd lost him, and had trouble locating him again. He had to have some kind of special forces training.
"There's a door in here, unfortunately," Abraham said from his alcove. "It must close after the machines exit. I will try to hotwire my way in."
"Great," I said. "Megan, you good?"
"Alive,"
she said, puffing.
"For now."
"How many drones can you see?" I asked. "Have they rolled out the larger ones on you yet? Can—"
"Little busy knees,"
she snapped. I settled back, anxiously listening to the gunfire and explosions. I wanted to be out there in the mess, firing and fighting. But that wouldn't make sense. I wasn't stealthy like Abraham or, well, immortal like Megan. Having an epic such as her on the team was certainly an advantage. They could handle this. My job as leader was to hang back and make judgment calls. It sucked. Was this how Prophet felt during missions he supervised? He had usually waited it out, leading from behind the scenes. I hadn't realized how tough that would be. Well, if there was one thing I'd learned in Babalar, it was that I needed to rein in my hot-headedness. I needed to be like, half a hothead instead. A hot chin? So I waited as Abraham worked. If he couldn't get in soon, I'd have to call off the mission. The longer this took, the greater the chances that the mysterious people who ran the foundry would discover that our army was only 5 people. "Status, Abraham?" I said.
"I think I can get this open," he said. "Just a little longer."
"I don't..." I trailed off. "Wait a sec, what was that?" A low rumbling was coming from nearby. I scanned below me and was surprised to see the mulchy forest floor buckling, leaves and moss folded back, revealing a metal doorway. Another group of drones flew out of it, zipping past my tree. "Mizzy!" I hissed into my headset. "Other drones are trying to flank your position!"
"Bummer,"
Mizzy said. She hesitated a moment. "Do you?"
"Yes, I know that word. You might need to institute the next phase."
I glanced down at the opening, which was rumbling closed. "Be prepared. It looks like the foundry has tunnels leading out to the forest. They'll be able to deploy drones from unexpected positions." The door below stopped, half shut. I frowned, leaning down to get a better look. It appeared that some dirt and rocks had fallen onto one of the door's gears. Guess that was the problem with hiding your entrance in the middle of a forest. "Abraham," I said into my headset excited. "The opening out here jammed open. You could get in this way."
"I think that might be difficult," he said.
And I looked back up to note that a couple of drones had retreated after a barrage of explosions from Mizzy's side. They hovered near Abraham's position. "Sparks," I whispered. Then raised my rifle and picked the 2 machines off with a pair of shots. They fell. We'd come prepared with bullets that fried electronics when they hit. I didn't know how they worked, but they'd cost basically everything we could scrounge up and trade, including the copter that Cody and Abraham had escaped New Cago in. It was too conspicuous anyway.
"Thanks for the assist," Abraham said as the drones dropped.
Beneath me, the gears on the opening scraped against one another, trying to force their way closed. The door moved another inch.
"This entrance is going to close any second," I said. "Get here fast!"
"Stealthy is not fast, David,"
Abraham said. I glanced at that opening. New Cago was lost to us. Prophet already attacked and ransacked all of our safe houses there. We'd barely gotten Edmund, another of our epic allies, out to a safe hiding spot. The people of New Cago were terrified. Babalar was little better. Few resources to be had, and old minions of Regalia's were keeping an eye on the place, serving Prof now. If this robbery went bust, we'd be broke. We'd have to set up somewhere off the map and try to rebuild over the next year, which would leave Prof with free rein to rampage. I wasn't sure what he was up to, why he'd left Babalar so quickly. but it bespoke some kind of plot or plan. Jonathan Phaedrus, now consumed by his powers, wouldn't be content to sit in a city and rule. He had ambitions. He could be the most dangerous epic this world had ever known. My stomach twisted at that thought. I couldn't justify any more delays.
"Cody," I said, "can you see and cover Abraham?"
"Just a sec," he said. "Yeah, I got him."
"Good," I said, "because I'm going in. You have ops."
2. I slid down my rope and hit the forest floor, crunching dried leaves. Ahead of me, the door to the hole finally started moving again. With a yelp, I dashed toward the opening in the ground and jumped in, skidding a short distance down a shallow ramp as the door closed with a final grinding sound behind me. I was in. Also likely trapped. So, yay? Faint emergency lights running along the walls revealed a sloping tunnel that was rounded at the top like a giant's throat. The incline was very steep, so I climbed to my feet and started inching down the slope, gun at my shoulder. I switched my radio, carried at my hip, to a different frequency. Protocol for whoever made it into the foundry, to let me focus. The others would know how to reach me. The dimness made me want to flip on my mobile, which could double as a flashlight, but I restrained myself. Who knew what kind of back doors the Nighthawk Foundry might have built into the things? In fact, who knew what the phones were truly capable of? They had to be some kind of epic-derived technology. Phones that worked under any circumstances with signals that couldn't be intercepted? I'd grown up in a pit underneath New Cago, but even I realized how fantastical that was. I reached the bottom of the incline and flipped on my scope's night vision and thermal settings. Sparks, this was an awesome gun. The silent corridor stretched out before me, nothing but smooth metal floor to ceiling. Considering its length, the tunnel had to lead under the foundry walls and into the compound. It was probably an access corridor. Contraband photos of the foundry interior showed all kinds of motivators and technology lying around on workbenches down here. That had enticed us to try this all-in plan. Grab and go. Hope we ended up with something useful. It would be technology built somehow from the bodies of epics. Even before I discovered that Prof had powers, I should have realized how much we relied on epics. I'd always dreamed that the Reckoners were some kind of pure human freedom force. Ordinary people fighting an extraordinary foe. That wasn't the way it happened, though, was it? Perseus had his magic horse, Aladdin had his lamp, and Old Testament David had his blessing from Jehovah. You want to fight a god? You'd better have one on your side, too. In our case, we'd cut off pieces of the gods, trapped them in boxes, and channeled their power. Much of it had originated here, the Nighthawk Foundry, secretive purveyors of epic corpses made into weapons. My headset crackled, and I jumped.
"David?"
Megan's voice, dialed into the private radio line.
"What are you doing?"
I winced.
"I found a drone access tunnel in the forest floor and managed to sneak in," I whispered.
Silence on the line, followed by... "Slants."
"What? Because it's reckless?"
"Sparks, no, because you didn't take me." An explosion shook somewhere near her.
"Sounds like you're having plenty of fun,"
I said. I kept moving forward, my rifle up and my focus ahead, watching for drones.
"Yeah, sure," Megan said. "Intercepting mini-missiles with my face. Loads of fun."
I smiled. The mere sound of her voice could do that to me. Hell, I'd rather be yelled at by Megan than be praised by anyone else. Besides, the fact that she was talking to me meant she hadn't actually intercepted any mini-missiles with her face. She was immortal in that if she died, she'd be reborn. But she was otherwise as fragile as anyone else, and because of recent concerns, she tried to limit using her powers. She'd be doing this mostly the old-fashioned way, ducking between trees, lobbing grenades, and taking shots while Cody and Mizzy covered her. I imagined her cursing softly, sweating while she sighted at a passing drone, her aim perfect, her face... Right. I should probably stay focused.
"I'll keep their attention up here," Megan said.
But be careful, David. You don't have a full infiltration suit. You'll have a heat signature to those drones, if they look closely.
Groovy,
I whispered, whatever that meant. Ahead of me, the tunnel started getting lighter, so I turned off the night vision on the scope and slowed my pace. I crept forward and stopped. The access tunnel ended at a large white corridor that stretched to the right and left. Brightly lit, with tile floors and metal walls, it was completely empty. Like an office when the shop down the street has free donut day. I pulled our maps, such as we had, from my pocket, and checked them. Didn't say much, though one of the photos looked a lot like this corridor. Well, somehow I had to find useful technology in here, steal it, and get out. Prof or Tia could have come up with a way better plan, but they weren't here. So I picked a direction at random and continued walking. When the tense silence was broken a few minutes later by a quickly approaching sound echoing through the corridor, it was actually a relief. I dashed toward the sound, not because I was eager to meet it, but because I spotted a door up the hall. I reached it in time to pull it open, thankfully it wasn't locked, and slip into a dark room. My back against the door, I heard a group of drones zip past outside. I turned and looked through the little window in the door to watch them buzz down the white corridor, then turn into the access tunnel. They hadn't spotted my heat signature. I flipped my radio to the open line and whispered, "More drones are going out the way I came in. Cody, status?"
"We've got a few tricks left," Cody said, "but it's getting frantic out here. Abraham did manage to get in through the roof, though. The two of you should grab what you can find and get out ASAP."
"Roger,"
Abraham said over the line.
"Got it,"
I said, glancing around the room I'd entered. It was completely dark, but judging by the sterile smell, it was some kind of lab chamber. I flipped on my night vision scope and gave the place a quick once-over. Turned out I was surrounded by bodies. 3. I choked back a cry of alarm. Rifle to my shoulder, I scanned the room again, my heart thumping. It was filled with long metal tables and sinks, interspersed with several large tubs, and the walls were lined floor to ceiling with shelves packed with jars of all sizes. I leaned in to get a better look at those jars on a shelf near me. Body parts, fingers, lungs, brains, all human, according to the labels. This had to be a laboratory where bodies were dissected. I shoved down my nausea and focused. Would they keep motivators in a room like this? Anything I found that used epic technology would need a motivator to work. The mission would be useless unless I found a stash of those. I started looking for them. They'd be small metal boxes about the size of a mobile's battery. Sparks! Everything was bathed in the green of the night vision, and through the tunnel view of my rifle's scope, the place looked on another level of eerie.
"Yo!"
Mizzy's voice said on the line, and I jumped again.
"David, you there?"
"Yeah,"
I whispered.
"Fighting on my side has moved over toward Megan, so I've got a breather,"
Mizzy said.
"Cody told me to see if you needed anything."
I wasn't certain what she could do from such a distance, but it was good to hear someone's voice.
"I'm in some kind of lab," I answered. "It has shelves full of body parts and jars and..." Oh, I felt nauseous again, swinging my gun to get a better look through the scope at the tubs nearby. They each had a glass lid and they were full. I gagged and recoiled. "And some vats filled with floating chunks of something. It's like a bunch of cannibals were getting ready to go bobbing for apples. Adam's apples, at least." I reached out and opened a cupboard where I found an entire shelf of pickled hearts. As I moved onward, my foot touched something that squished. I jumped back, gun toward the floor, but it was only a wet rag. "Mizzy," I whispered, "this place is super creepy. Think I'm safe to turn on a light in here?"
"Oh, that'd be way smart. The people with a hyper-advanced bunker and flying attack drones aren't going to have security cameras in their labs. Nope, not a chance."
"Point taken."
"Or they've already spotted you when a squad of death copters is heading your way. But in case you're not trapped and about to be executed, I'd err on the side of being careful."
She said it all in an upbeat, almost excited voice. Mizzy could be perkier than a sack of caffeinated puppies. Usually that was encouraging. Usually I wasn't on edge from sneaking through a room full of half-corpses. I knelt, touching the rag on the floor. That it was still wet might imply someone had been working in here overnight, and had been interrupted by our attack.
"Anything you can swipe?" Mizzy asked.
"Not unless you want to stitch yourself up a new boyfriend."
"Ew! Look, just see what you can grab and get out. We're already over time."
"Right," I said, opening another cabinet. "Surgical utensils. I'll hurry, it..."
"Wait a sec."
I froze, listening. Had I heard something? Yes, a kind of rattling. I tried not to imagine a corpse rising out of one of those tubs. The sound had come from near the door I'd entered through, and a tiny light flicked on suddenly near the floor in the same area. I frowned, inching toward it. It was a small drone, flat and round, with whirring brushes along its bottom. It had come in through a little flap near the door, kind of like a cat door, and was buffing the floor. I relaxed.
"Only a cleaning bot," I said over the line.
The bot immediately went silent. Mizzy started to reply, but I lost the words as the little cleaning bot re-engaged and zipped back toward its door. Throwing myself to the ground, I stretched out a hand and barely managed to grab the little drone before it could scoot out through the small hinged flap.
"David?"
Mizzy asked, anxious.
"What was that?"
"Me being an idiot," I said with a wince. I'd knocked my elbow on the ground as I dove. "The bot recognized something was wrong and made a break for it. I caught it before it got out, though. It might have warned someone."
"Might, anyway," Mizzy said. "It could have a link to the place's security."
"I'll be quick," I said, climbing to my feet. I set the cleaning bot upside down on a shelf near a rack of blood pouches hanging in a small cooler with a glass door. Several more were lying out in the open on the counter. Ick.
"Maybe some of these body parts are from Epics," I said. "I could take them and we'd have DNA samples. Could we use those?"
"How?"
"I don't know," I said. "Make weapons out of them somehow?"
"Yeah," Mizzy said skeptically. "I'll staple a foot to the front of my gun and hope it shoots lasers now or something."
I blushed in the darkness, but I didn't see the need for the ribbing. If I stole some valuable DNA, we could trade it for supplies, right? Though admittedly, these body parts probably wouldn't do. The important parts of Epic DNA degraded quickly, so I'd need to find frozen tissue if I wanted something I could sell. Freezers. Where would I find freezers? I checked one of the tubs, lifting the glass lid, but the water inside was chilly, not frozen. I let the top back down, scanning the room. There was a door at the rear, opposite the one that led out to the hallway. "You know," I said to Mizzy as I walked toward the door, "this place is exactly like I'd expect it to be."
"You expected a room full of body parts?"
"Yeah, kinda," I said. "I mean, crazy scientists making weapons from dead epics? Why wouldn't they have a room full of body parts?"
"Not sure what you're driving at with this, David, other than creeping me out."
"Just a sec." I reached the door, which was locked. It took a few kicks, but I got it open. I wasn't too worried about the noise. If someone nearby was listening, they'd already have heard me struggling with the little drone. The door swung back, revealing a dark corridor, smaller than the hallway outside and completely unlit. I listened, heard nothing, and decided to see where it went.
"Anyway," I continued, "it makes me wonder, how do they make weapons out of epics?"
"Dunno,"
Mizzy said. "I can fix the stuff once we get it, but motivators are out of my league."
"When an epic dies, their cells immediately start to break down," I said. "Everyone knows that part."
"Everyone who is a nerd."
"I'm not a..."
"It's okay, dude," Mizzy said. "Embrace your nature. Be yourself and stuff. We're all basically nerds, only about different things. Except Cody. I think he's a geek or something. Can't remember my terminology. Something about eating chicken heads."
I sighed.
"When an epic dies, if you're fast enough, you can take a sample of their cells. The mitochondria are supposed to be important. You freeze those cells, and you can sell them on the black market. Somehow, that becomes technology. Problem is, obliteration let Regalia perform surgery on him. I saw the scars. They made a bomb using his powers.
So why surgery? I said.
He could have just given a blood sample, right? Why did Regalia call in some fancy surgeon?
Mizzy went silent.
Huh,
she finally said.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'd assumed that an epic had to be dead to make technology from their powers. Regalia and obliteration proved me wrong. But if you could create technology from living epics, why hadn't Steelheart made a legion of invincible soldiers? Maybe he was too paranoid for that, but surely he would have created hundreds of versions of Edmund, the epic who powered his city. I reached a corner in the dark hallway. Using the infrared on my scope, I peeked around it and scanned for danger. The night vision revealed a small room filled with several large freezer chests. I didn't see any distinctive heat sources, though the timer on my scope's overlay warned me I should turn back. Except if I left, and Abraham didn't get anything either, we'd be ruined. I needed to find something. I crouched there, worried I was running out of time, but also bothered by what I'd seen. Beyond the question of making motivators from living epics, there was another problem with all of this. When people talked about epic-derived technology, they implied that all the devices came from a similar process. But how could that be? Weapons were so different from the Dowser, which let us detect who was an epic. Both seemed hugely different from the Spiral, the piece of epic-derived technology that had let me fly on streams of water. I was no nerd, but I knew enough to realize that these technologies were all in very different disciplines. You didn't call a gerbil doctor to work on a horse. Yet when it came to epic technology, it seemed that one expertise was enough to create a variety of items. I admitted the truth to myself. These questions were the real reason we were here at Nighthawk. Prof had kept secrets, even before succumbing to his powers. It felt like nobody had been straight with me about any of this, ever. I wanted answers. They were probably here somewhere. Maybe I'd find them behind that group of robotic war drones that were extending their gun arms from behind the freezers in front of me.
Oh. 4. The drones' floodlights turned on as one, blinding me, and they opened fire. Fortunately, I'd spotted them in time and was able to pull back around the corner before any shots hit me. I turned and took off at a run, retreating down the corridor. Gunfire drowned out Mizzy's voice in my ear as the robot drones chased me. Each had a square bottom with multi-directional wheels and a spindly body topped with an assault rifle. They'd be perfect for maneuvering around furniture and through hallways, but sparks, it felt humiliating to be running from them. They looked more like coat racks than machines of war. I reached the door to the lab with the body parts and ran through it, skidding to a stop, then slammed my back against the wall next to it. The tap of a button patched the view from my scope into a small screen on the side of my Gottschalk rifle, which let me lift the gun around the corner and fire without risking a hit. The robots scuttled like a group of sparking brooms on wheels. Personally, I'd have been embarrassed to create such stupid-looking robots. I fired in burst mode without much aiming, but the corridor was narrow enough that it didn't matter. I gunned down several of the robots, slowing the others, which had to push past the wreckage. After I dropped a few more, they retreated to take cover around the corner, in the room with the freezers.
"David!"
Mizzy's frantic voice finally drew my attention.
"What's happening?"
"I'm fine," I said.
"But they spotted me."
"Get out,"
I hesitated.
"David?"
"There's something in there, Mizzy. A room that was under lock and key, guarded by drones. I'll bet they moved in there as soon as our original attack happened. Either that, or that room is always guarded, which means..."
"Oh, calamity. You're going to be you, aren't you?"
"You did just tell me to, and I quote, embrace my nature."
I fired another salvo as I caught motion at the end of the corridor.
"Let Abraham and the others know I've been spotted. Pull everyone out and be ready to retreat."
"And you?"
"I'm going to find out what's in that room. I hesitated. I might have to get shot to do it.
What?
I'll be radio silent for a moment. Sorry. I dropped my radio and headset, then tapped a button at the side of my gun that extended a small tripod on the bottom. I set it pointing into the tunnel at an angle, hoping to ricochet bullets off the metal wall toward the robots, but really setting up a distraction. The gun could remote fire, using the slightly melted controller I popped out of its alcove on the side. I hurried through the room, triggering short bursts of fire to make it seem I was still exchanging shots with the drones. Their floodlights were bright enough that they reflected off glass and metal in this room, giving me enough light to move by. I snatched the little cleaning bot off the shelf, its wheels still whirring frantically, then grabbed a pouch of blood off the counter and a roll of surgical tape I'd spotted in a drawer earlier. I tore off a piece of tape and affixed the pouch to the top of the robot, then punctured the bag with my knife. I crossed to where I'd originally entered the room, cracked open the door, and set the machine down outside it. It scuttled off down the white hallway at speed, leaving a wide trail of blood drops behind. As blatant as a sudden tuba solo in the middle of a rap single. Great. Now hopefully I could fake the getting shot part. I grabbed another pouch of blood and stabbed it with my knife. Taking a deep breath, I ran to the door on the opposite side of the room where the drones were firing on my Gottschalk. The robots had made progress, shoving the fallen ones out of the way and advancing. I ducked back as the robots started firing at me. Then I screamed and sprayed some of the blood on the wall. From there, I dashed to one of the tubs, using the pouch to squirt a different trail toward the exit. I couldn't see much of what was inside the tub, now that I wasn't using my scope, but I pulled it open, gritted my teeth, and climbed in, touching some slippery bits that I was pretty convinced were livers. As I settled into the icy fluid, I was profoundly aware of exactly how gruesome all this was. Fortunately, I was quite accustomed to my plans humiliating me in some way. This time I was merely doing it on purpose. So hey, progress. I tried to remain still, hoping the tub's refrigeration unit and icy temperature would hide me from any infrared detection the robots might be using. Unfortunately, to not stand out, I had to close the top of the tub and hold my breath. And so I lay there among the bobbing body parts, watching lights flash above as the robots and their floodlights entered the laboratory. I couldn't see much through the water and the glass top, but I couldn't help imagining the robots gathering around the tub, looking in at me, amused at my feeble attempt at a distraction. I held my breath until I was ready to burst. My face, not covered by the infiltration suit, was freezing. Blessedly, the lights finally vanished. I managed to last a little longer before I pushed open the top and, shivering, looked around the lab. Pitch black. The robots had apparently taken the bait. I wiped the liquid from my eyes and climbed out. Sparks! As if this place hadn't been creepy before, I decided to crawl into a vat of livers to hide from death robots. I shook my head, crossing over to pick up my radio and gun. I shoved on the headset, but I had gotten blood on it, and it seemed to be on the fritz. I'd have to use the radio the old way. I'm back, I said quietly, pressing send and speaking into it. David? You're crazy, a voice responded. I smiled. Hello, Megan, I said, slipping into the narrow corridor. I jogged past fallen robots. Everyone pulling out? Everyone who's smart. Love you too, I said. I stopped at the corner where I'd first run into the robot guards and peeked around it. The room beyond was dark, like before. I looped my gun strap around my shoulder, then used the scope to look for lingering robots. I'm almost ready to go. Give me a few more minutes. Roger. I clicked the radio to send only, so that their chatter wouldn't alert any nearby foes. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to be more careful. My trick with the false trail would soon be discovered. As if in testament to the danger, a distant explosion shook the building. I felt at the wall and turned on the lights. Then crossed the room to one of the large standing freezers. The stainless steel surface reflected my face, which had 2 weeks' worth of scrub on it. I thought it looked rugged. Megan tended to snicker at it. Heart thumping, I unlocked the first of the chests and threw it open,
releasing a burst of icy air. Inside were rows and rows of frozen glass vials with colorful caps. Not the motivators I'd been looking for, but most likely epic DNA samples. "Well," I whispered, "at least it's not a rack of frozen dinners."
"No,"
a voice responded.
"I keep those in the other chest."
5. I stood very still, a chill rising up my spine. I turned, careful not to make any sudden motions, and found that I had, unfortunately, missed a single robot hidden in the shadowed recesses of the room. That beanpole of a body was hardly intimidating, but the souped-up Famous G3 assault rifle mounted to its top was something else entirely. I considered trying to shoot it, but my body was turned the wrong direction. I'd have to swing my gun around and hope to hit the robot before I got shot myself. My chances did not seem good.
"I actually do have food in the other one,"
the voice continued, projected from the robot. A man's voice, tenor, soft. He had to be one of the enigmatic people who ran the foundry. Most of these drones seemed autonomous, but their masters would be watching. Each gun had a camera on it.
"Not frozen dinners, mind you. Steaks. A few choice ribeyes left over from the good old days. I miss those more than anything."
"Who are you?" I asked.
"The man you're trying to rob. How did you divert my drones?"
I bit my lip, trying to judge the response time of that gun as I inched to the side and watched it follow me. Sparks. The tracking apparatus was excellent. The gun stayed right on me. The robot speakers even made a little cocking noise by way of warning, and I froze in place. But did it have full range of movement? Maybe not.
"So this is what has become of the mighty Jonathan Phaedrus," the voice said. "Sending a hit team in to try to steal from me."
Phaedrus? Of course. The Nighthawk foundry worker thought we were still with Prof. We hadn't exactly trumpeted it out that he'd fallen to his powers. Most people didn't even know he was an epic in the first place. "We only had to come," I said, "because you refused to trade with us."
"Yes, very honorable of you. Trade us what we want or we'll take it by force. I expected more of one of Jonathan's special teams. You barely..."
The voice trailed off, then continued, fainter.
"What do you mean there's another one? They stole what? How did they even know where those were? Damn it!"
Something muffled responded. I tried to step away, but the drone made the cocking sound again, this time louder.
"You!"
the voice said, turning his attention back to me.
"Call your friends. Tell them to return what the other man stole, or I will kill you. You have 3 seconds. 2 seconds. Guys!"
The wall to my right melted in a burst of heat, revealing a shadowy form beyond. I dove and, against my instincts, rolled toward the robot drone. It got off an initial round at me, but, as I'd hoped, when I got too close, its gun couldn't angle down far enough to hit me. That meant I only got shot once. It hit me in the leg as I was rolling. Not sure how that managed to happen, but sparks, it hurt. The robot tried to back away, but I seized it, ignoring the searing pain in my leg. Last time I'd been shot, I hadn't felt it at first, but this time I had trouble fighting through the sheer agony. Still, I managed to keep the robot from firing at me again as I reached up and unlocked the device that held the gun to the machine. It dropped free. Unfortunately, as I'd been struggling, a good 2 dozen drones had unclipped from the ceiling, where they'd been disguised as panels, and hovered down on propellers. I hadn't been nearly as safe in here as I'd assumed, though for now their attention was focused on a figure that stepped through the slag of the wall, a man made entirely of flames, his figure the deep red of molten rock. Firefight had arrived. Too bad he wasn't real. I grabbed my wounded thigh and scanned the room for Megan. She was hiding near the corner, in the corridor leading back to the laboratory. Firefight wasn't real, not completely, But neither was he an illusion. He was a shadow from another place, another version of our world. It wasn't that he had actually come to save me. Megan was just overlaying our world with a ripple from that world, making it seem like he was here. It fooled the drones. Indeed, I could feel the heat coming from the melted wall and could smell smoke in the air. As the drones frantically started firing, I reached into the open freezer and grabbed a handful of vials. Then I limped across the room, joining Megan, who came to me as soon as she was aware that I'd been hit. "Slants," she said with a grunt, getting under my arm and hauling me toward cover, then shoved the vials I'd taken into her pocket. "I leave you alone for 5 minutes and you go and get shot." "At least I got you a present," I said, pushing my back against the wall inside the curve as she quickly bound my wound. "Present? The vials?" "I got you a new gun," I said, gritting my teeth at the pain as she pulled the bandage tight. "You mean the Famous you left on the floor over there?"
"Yup."
"You realize that every one of the, 100 drones I fought outside had one of those? We could build a fort out of them at this point."
"Well, once you finish using all those for a fort, you'll need one for shooting, so you're welcome. Even comes..." I winced at the pain. "Even comes with its own room full of death robots, and maybe some stakes. Don't know if he was lying about those or not."
Behind her, Firefight looked unconcerned, bullets melting before they reached him. It wasn't as hot as it should have been. It was as if the fire were distant, and we felt a breeze that blew out from it. We barely understood how her powers worked. Those drones that Firefight melted weren't actually dead, and that wall hadn't actually been opened. The other world's ability to affect this one was fleeting. For a minute, we were all caught in the warping of reality as the two worlds mixed. But in moments, it would all fade back to normal.
"I'm fine," I said. "We've got to move."
Megan said nothing, getting under my arm again. The fact that she gave no reply, and that she'd stopped us in the middle of a fight to look at the wound, told me what I needed to know. I was hit bad, and bleeding a lot. We shuffled away down the corridor toward the laboratory. As we did, I glanced over my shoulder to make sure no drones were following. None were, but I did catch an unnerving sight. Firefight was looking at me, again. Through the flames of distortion, two black eyes met my own. Megan swore he couldn't see our world, and yet he raised a hand toward me. We were soon out of his sight. The loud pops of gunfire chased us as we staggered into the laboratory room with all the organs. We stepped to the side, anxious, as another group of drones scuttled past. They didn't even glance at us. There was an epic to fight. We crossed the room, then moved into the bright hallway outside. I left a real blood trail on the floor.
"What was that place?" Megan said. "Were those hearts in those jars?"
"Yeah," I said. "Man, my leg hurts."
"Cody,"
Megan said, sounding alarmed.
"Is Abraham out?" "Okay, good. Prime the jeeps and have the first aid kit ready. David's been shot."
Silence.
"I don't know how we're going to do that, Mizzy. Hopefully we can use the distraction like we planned. Be ready."
I focused on keeping myself moving through the pain. We turned up the tunnel leading to the hidden entrance I'd used to sneak into the place. Behind us, the shooting suddenly stopped. Bad sign. Firefight had vanished.
"You couldn't make him follow us?" I asked.
"I need a breather," she said, eyes forward, jaw set. "This was hard enough in the old days, when I didn't care what it did to me."
"You mean?"
I said. "It's just a headache," she replied.
"Like yesterday, but worse. It's as if... well, as if something were pounding on my skull trying to get in. Creating such a large distortion in reality is pushing me to the edge. So let's hope that..."
She stopped. A group of drones was gathered in the access tunnel before us, blocking our path to the exit into the forest. That exit teased me. It was several hundred feet away, but I could see that it had been blown open by an explosion, letting in filtered sunlight. It was likely how Megan had entered, but with those drones between it and us, the exit might as well have been in Australia. Then, without warning, the ceiling caved in. Huge chunks of metal fell around us, and the tunnel shook as if in a blast. I knew enough by now, though, to recognize something off about the explosion. Perhaps the steel chunks didn't scrape as loudly as they should have, or perhaps it was the way the corridor shook, or perhaps it was how those steel chunks fell directly in front of us, blocking the drones, which started firing, but missed hitting both Megan and me with any debris. This was another dimensional illusion, though it was still violent enough to knock me from my feet. I hit with a grunt, trying to roll to my side to protect my wounded leg. The room spun, and for a moment I felt like a grasshopper stapled to a frisbee. When my vision wobbled back to a semblance of stability, I found myself huddled beside one of the fallen hunks of metal. It felt real to me, for the moment. Here, in the blending of two worlds Megan had created, the illusion was real. My blood, which had soaked through the impromptu bandage, stained the floor like someone had wiped it with a dirty cloth. Megan knelt beside me, her head bowed, her breath coming in hisses. "Megan?" I asked over the sounds of the firing drones. "Sparks, they'd be on us soon, blockade or no blockade." Megan's eyes were open wide, and her lips parted, exposing clenched teeth. Sweat trickled down her temples. Whatever she'd been fighting off when using her powers recently, it was coming for her in force. 6. This wasn't supposed to happen. We'd found the secret, the way to make epics immune to the corrupting effects of their powers. If you faced your deepest fears, it caused the darkness to retreat. It was supposed to be over. Megan had run into a burning building to save me, facing her fears head-on. She should have been free. And yet there was no denying the frantic cast to her expression. Her clenched teeth, her tense brow. She turned toward me, not blinking. "I can feel him, David," she whispered. "He's trying to get in." "Who?" She didn't answer, but I knew who she meant. Calamity. Calamity, the red spot in the sky, the new star that had heralded the arrival of the epics, was itself an epic. I somehow knew Calamity was supremely angry that in learning that Epic's fears were connected to their weaknesses, we'd figured out how to overcome its influence on Megan. The gunfire of the drones stopped.
"That cave-in is an illusion of some sort, isn't it?"
the voice from before called, echoing in the corridor.
"Which Epic did you kill to gain this technology? Who told you how to build the motivators?"
At least he was talking instead of shooting. "Megan," I said, taking her arm. "Megan, look at me." She focused on me, and that seemed to help, though the wildness was still there in her eyes. I was tempted to step back and let her unleash it. Maybe that would save us. But it would doom her. When Prof had succumbed to the darkness brought by his powers, he'd killed friends without so much as flinching. That man, who had spent his life defending others, was now entirely subject to his powers. I wouldn't have the same happen to Megan. I reached to my thigh pocket and, wincing as I shifted my wounded leg, pulled out my lighter. I held it up before Megan and flicked on the flame. She shied back briefly, then hissed and seized the flame in her fist, burning her hand. The fallen metal chunks we'd been using as cover wavered, then faded out of existence. The ceiling repaired itself. Fire was still Megan's weakness, and even having faced her fears, the weakness negated her powers, and probably always would. Fortunately, so long as she remained willing to face that weakness, she could apparently drive the darkness away. The tension left her, and she sank to the ground with a sigh.
"Great," she muttered. "Now my head and my hand hurt."
I smiled wanly and slid my gun away across the ground. Then did the same with Megan's. I raised my hands as the drones surrounded us. Most of them were the tracks and assault rifle type, though there were also a few that flew. I was in luck. They held their fire. One of the machines rolled closer. It had raised a small screen from its base, which projected a backlit, shadowy figure.
"That image was of firefight from New Cago, right?" "It fooled my sensors completely," the voice said. "No ordinary illusion could have done that. What technology are you using?"
"I'll tell you," Megan said.
Just don't shoot. Please.
She stood up, and as she did so, she kicked something backward with her heel. Her headset. Still lying on my side, I caught it under my hand and rolled onto it, masking the motion by holding my bleeding leg. I didn't think any drones spotted what we'd done.
Well,
the voice said.
I'm waiting.
Dimensional shadows, Megan said. They aren't illusions, but ripples from another state of reality.
She'd stood to face the robot army, putting herself between the robots and me. Most focused their weapons on her, and if they killed her, she'd reincarnate. I appreciated her protective gesture, but sparks. Reincarnating could do unpredictable things to her, particularly with how her powers had been acting lately. She hadn't died since we were in Babylar, and I hoped to keep it that way. I needed to do something. I curled up, still holding my leg. The pain was real. I could only hope the way I trembled and bled would make the drones dismiss me as I laid my head on the headset and covertly whispered into the microphone.
Mizzy, you there? Cody? Abraham?
No reply came.
Impossible, the man said to Megan. I've tried numerous times to capture that type of power in a motivator, and I doubt anyone has the knowledge to do what I could not. Dimensional rifting is too complex, too strong to...
I glanced up at Megan, who stood tall and proud before the arrayed army, even though I knew her head must be splitting with pain. She'd spoken earlier in humility, as if beaten, but her posture told another story, of a refusal to back down, to bend a knee, or to bow to anyone or anything.
You're an epic, aren't you? The voice said, tone growing hard. There is no technology, no motivator. Jonathan is recruiting, then, now that he's turned?
I couldn't stifle my gasp. How did he know about Prof? I wanted to demand answers, but I was in no position to do so. I rested my head against the floor, suddenly drowsy. Sparks! How much blood had I lost? As my head touched the headset, it crackled, and Mizzy's voice cut in.
Megan? Sparks, talk to me! Are you...
I'm here, Mizzy, I whispered.
David? Finally! Look, I've placed charges to collapse the tunnel. Can you get out that way? I can blow it after you pass.
Charges. I glanced at the drones surrounding us. Megan's illusions.
Do it now, Mizzy, I whispered.
You sure?
Yes.
Then I braced myself. The explosion blew above, and it somehow seemed louder because I'd been expecting it. The chunks of metal fell exactly where they had before, slamming to the ground inches from where I crouched. But I was left unharmed, as was Megan. The robots, on the other hand, acted like a bunch of youthful dreams and got thoroughly crushed. Megan was at my side in an instant, handgun pulled from her thigh holster, firing at the remaining drones. I managed to pull the knife out of my calf sheath, and I held it up, drawing a glance from Megan that said, "Seriously? At least it's not a stupid samurai sword," I muttered, putting my back to the debris. As the falling dust cleared, Megan picked off one final drone, sending it spinning to the ground. I pushed myself to my feet, well, foot, and hobbled along the wreckage of the tunnel toward my gun.
"Where did that come from?"
Megan asked, gesturing toward the broken ceiling. Mizzy's charges hadn't completely collapsed the tunnel. In fact, so far as I could tell, the fallen wreckage was identical to the illusory debris that Megan had created.
"Mizzy said she could blow the place after our escape."
"And you had her drop it on top of us instead?"
Megan said, fetching my gun and handing it to me, then grabbing her rifle.
"I was thinking, your illusions pull from alternate realities, right? And the closer the reality is to ours, the easier it is to pull. You were really tired."
"Still am.
And I figured you used a reality very like our own. Explosion from above. Mizzy had placed charges, so I guessed it would happen the same way."
Megan got under my arm again and helped me limp around the wreckage. She shot a drone that was trying to extricate itself from some fallen stone.
"That might not have worked," she said softly. "Things don't always turn out like they do in the other realities. You could have crushed yourself, David."
"Well, I didn't,"
I said.
So for now, we're safe.
I trailed off as sounds echoed up the corridor, coming from far behind us. Metallic sounds. The whirring of copters. Treads on metal. Megan looked at me, then at the exit to the forest ahead, still 100 feet away.
"Let's hurry," I said, hobbling forward. Instead, Megan took my arm from around her shoulders and placed it against the wall so I could hold myself up.
"You're going to need some time to extract," she said.
"So we should hurry."
Megan shouldered her rifle, then faced back down the corridor.
"Megan!"
"That spot beside the rubble is defensible," she said. "I can hold them off for a good long while."
"Get going."
"But..."
"David, please, just go."
I took her by the shoulder, then pulled her to me and kissed her. That twisted my leg, causing pain to flare up my side, but whatever. A kiss from Megan was worth it. I released her, and then I left, as she had said. I felt cowardly, but part of being in a team was about recognizing when someone else could do a job better than you. And part of being a man was learning to let your immortal girlfriend take a turn being the heroic one. I'd be back for her, though, dead or not. And soon. No way was I going to leave her body to end up like those in the tubs I'd found. I stumbled up the slope, trying not to dwell on what might happen to Megan. She'd have to shoot herself once the drones overwhelmed her, as she couldn't risk getting captured. Behind me, Megan started firing, the rifle shots echoing in the steel hall.